Magic, she would not have been able to manage.
Here, at least eat something.
She scooped up a spoonful of the dark red borscht and lifted it to his mouth. Sergei opened and swallowed the soup. He screwed up his face.
What is that? Borscht?
It absolutely is not.
Well, I tried my best.
Since Sergei had been in bed the last 2 days, Galina had had to do the cooking, which was a near impossible task, seeing as she had a full kitchen staff at home and had never lifted a paring knife in her life. Add in the fact that most of her meals were French in nature, so she had forgotten what a proper Russian beet soup ought to taste like. She had attempted to make the borscht herself, but she couldn't figure out how to get the hairy little roots off the beets, and the beets stained her hands and rolled off the cutting board onto the floor. In a huff, she had finally resorted to conjuring the dish, even though she knew Sergei despised conjured food. Still, she had made an effort. Sergei pushed her hand in the bowl away and slumped back onto the mattress. His bare wrist hung off the edge of the bed. That was when Galina remembered the leather bracelet that had been there at the oath.
Mon frère, what exactly did you give Vika that day at Bolshevnoi Duplo?
A bracelet, he muttered.
But not any bracelet. It was charmed, wasn't it?
Of course it was. I'm sure the dagger you gave Nikolai was also enchanted.
Galina set the soup bowl on the nightstand.
I would be a fool if it wasn't. But the bracelet is the problem. It must be. What is it? What is it doing to you?
Sergei grumbled and turned away from her to face the wall.
Sergei!
He rolled back and scowled.
What does it matter?
Because I need to know how to help my brother.
Whether he knew it or not, she did actually care about him. She remembered how much it pained her when they were children, when she watched him trying to keep his pet chinchilla alive and suffering with each failure. It died at least 5 times, surviving a month in their home only because Sergei kept half-succeeding in resurrecting it by siphoning some of his own energy into it. The chinchilla just had not had much will to live. Finally, after the 6th death, their father had ordered the chinchilla be left in peace, partly in pity for the poor beast, but mostly because every resurrection left Sergei weakened and susceptible to pneumonia or other illness. He had always been so attached to animals. Which was precisely the problem now, wasn't it? Sergei was too attached to Vika. Because she'd come into his life as a helpless baby, she must have seemed more like one of his gentle forest animals than the preening people of St. Petersburg society he so despised. And his current fatigued state must have very much to do with that bracelet he'd given his adopted daughter.
You're giving her your energy, aren't you? The bracelet is a magical conduit you've created.
Sergei sighed.
She's strong, but this way she'll have even more stamina.
Oh, Sergei, is there a limit?
No.
Galina sank to her brother's bedside.
So if the game continues for much longer, she could drain your entire life away.
Sergei shrugged.
If she wins, it will have been worth it.
His eyelids drooped, and he buried his face into the rough pillow.
But the problem is she won't win.
Sergei didn't answer. Instead, he sang himself a wistful lullaby that their mother had sung to them when they were children.
Na ulitse doshtik, svedra polivaet, svedra polivaet, zen lyu pribavaet.
It is raining outdoors, as if from a bucket. pouring from a bucket. Rain is settling dirt down. Galina stirred the borscht around and around, with no intention of eating it. She stayed by her brother's bed until he fell asleep. The fact was, she did not care a mite about the girl. Nikolai, whom she had trained to be a fighter, would ultimately prevail. But for Sergei's sake, she hoped the game ended sooner rather than later. The snow kept falling endlessly outside. Chapter 36. Nikolai slept the entire day after the masquerade. When he woke 30 or so hours later, he was groggy and felt as if he could sleep another day more. But his scar throbbed, and the realization that he was still in the game, that the dance with Vika had changed everything, and yet changed nothing at all, catapulted him out of bed. He had thought, during the mazurka, that they'd had something. Their touch had both frenzied and frozen the ballroom. Their breathing had synchronized, heatedly. And then they'd had all the dances afterward, where she'd let him charm her feet, and he'd felt as if they'd spent the entire evening wrapped around each other, the warm silk of his magic against the strangely comforting chill of her dress, their magic and their bodies moving as one. But then she'd suddenly run away without so much as a, "Thank you for the dances," or even, "I'll see you again in the game." It was as if the mazurka had never happened at all. And now Nikolai's scar burned again. She had already made her move. But how? How could she have the energy to play the game after the exhausting night at the ball? He splashed cold water on his face. Of course, it had been his powers used during her dances. But conjuring those two dresses, the blizzard and the chocolate gowns, would have been enough to take Nikolai out completely. How had she managed not only to create them, but also to appear so fresh-faced at the ball, full of wit and vibrance, and then to follow it up with a move in the game? He shook his head at his reflection in the mirror. He was getting dressed when Renata knocked and said through the door,
"You have a message from the Cesarevich."
Nikolai hopped into his trousers, unbolted the locks, and flung open the door without even tucking in his shirt tail. Renata stood in the hall, her hair neatly braided, as always. She seemed to have grown an inch, and grown prettier since the ball. But he didn't have time to dwell on that.
"What did he say?"
"I didn't open it."
She held out the envelope in her hands. Nikolai took it and tore it open.
"Why didn't you wake me?"
"I tried, but you didn't answer. I've been pounding on your door off and on for the last hour."
"Oh." Nikolai glanced at her and had the decency to look sheepish.
"Sorry."
She stepped into the room and leaned over his arm so she could see as he unfolded the heavy stationery. N. Come quickly. There is a new island in the bay. P.
"What?"
Renata said.
"Vika's third move."
"But
I have to go."
Nikolai ran to his wardrobe and threw on a waistcoat, shoved his feet into his boots, and snatched a frock coat that didn't match. Then he slid down the banister and was out the front door before he realized that, like Vika the night before, he'd run off without saying goodbye. Nikolai saw Pasha pacing the dock before he even saw the new island. Not that the island was far from the shores of St. Petersburg, but Pasha's pacing was so frenetic, it was hard to focus on anything else. From the looks of his hair, Pasha had been pacing for quite some time. There was probably a path already worn onto the wood planks beneath him. Pasha glanced up and caught sight of Nikolai.
"Gavril!"
he hollered to the captain of his guard.
"Ready the ferry!"
Then he bounded down the pier to meet Nikolai.
"What took you so long?"
Pasha asked when he reached his friend.
"It's not even 8 o'clock in the morning. I was asleep." How could you sleep when a new island has cropped up in the middle of the night?
Nikolai twisted his mouth.
Because in my slumber, I was unaware that a new island had cropped up in the middle of the night.
Pasha laughed and slapped him on the back.
Fair enough. Besides, you're here now. I was about to give up on you, although I vastly prefer doing this together.
He started down the dock.
Come on! I forbade anyone to land on the island before we had a chance to explore it.
Nikolai hung back.
Are you sure it's wise for you to be the first? We know nothing of this island.
Which was true. It could very well be dangerous. But it was also true that a selfish part of Nikolai wanted Vika's magic to himself, even though she'd left him at the ball. He didn't want the experience of her new island spoiled by anyone else, even if it was Pasha.
I doubt that the enchanter, whichever one it is, would be so bold as to build a trap for me. It would be suicide to harm the Cesarevich.
Pasha grinned, as if he were amused with himself for actually admitting that he was the heir to the throne. But Nikolai hardly heard the last part of what Pasha had said.
Did you say the enchanter, whichever one it is? Indeed. Can you believe it? The Lightning Girl is not the only one. She didn't mean for it to slip out, but I caught it. I gather enchanters are rather protective of their identities.
Pasha hopped onto the ferry. Nikolai bit on his knuckle. Then he followed Pasha, although Nikolai didn't hop. He almost tripped on a rope snaking across the deck. One of Pasha's guards caught him and helped him onto the ferry. The rest of the guards clambered on right behind him. So Pasha knew there was another enchanter. But he didn't seem to suspect Nikolai at all. Still, Nikolai's stomach lurched, and he leaned over the railing. Damn seasickness. Except Nikolai never got seasick, and they hadn't even left the dock. Which meant it was the guilt of lying to his best friend that was making him feel this way. Splendid. A few minutes later, the ferry pushed off from shore, leaving behind the throngs already amassed along the embankment, gawking both at the island. They'd managed to convince themselves that it was an artificial one, installed overnight as a birthday gift from the King of Sweden, and at the sight of the Cesarevich in their midst. They didn't know Pasha often walked among them in disguise. To the people of St. Petersburg, Pasha was a rare snow leopard who kept to his gilded cage in the palace. Pasha waved jauntily as he and Nikolai sailed into the bay, and a few onlookers waved and blew kisses back. Then he strode to the ferry's bow. Nikolai took several deep breaths and pulled himself together. He took one more breath for good measure. What he'd do if the river tried to rope him in and drown him again, he didn't know. Then he followed Pasha, and the two watched the new island as they approached. The island was a small one, perhaps a half mile squared, or a little more. But what it lacked in size, it made up for in appearance. Its banks were composed not of sand, but of low granite ridges, sparkling in the sun. Bright flowers freckled the shoreline, and trees reached halfway up to the clouds. It was also very green with all those trees.
Unnaturally green for this time of year, Nikolai thought, when the leaves ought to be turning shades of red and gold. It reminds me of the summer garden, Pasha said.
Nikolai nodded.
Except the summer here is eternal.
He wondered if the island, like the summer garden in the city, was also full of rare flowers and plants and marble statues and fountains. But regardless, Vika had created an entire island. Nikolai's chest tightened as their ferry sailed closer. They arrived not long afterward. However, the ferrymaster could not find a place to bring the boat to shore. Nikolai frowned. It would have been easy for Vika to create a natural dock, an extension of land or an outcropping of rock. It wasn't as if she were unfamiliar with ferries and ports. She lived on an island herself. Unless she did it intentionally, to make it harder to approach. But why? Why would she go to all the effort of conjuring something as magnificent as an island, only to make it difficult for anyone to come ashore?
You're already building it, aren't you?
Pasha asked. Nikolai jumped.
What? I wager you're already mentally calculating how to construct a dock or a bridge to the main part of Petersburg.
Pasha asked.
Oh, right.
Nikolai forced a smile.
Yes, it would be possible to erect an iron bridge. Perhaps like the one in Coalbrookdale in England. Although more recently there has been talk among engineers of truss systems, such as the Gornless Bridge that was just finished, also in England. Why are you laughing?
Pasha shook his head.
I don't understand that brain of yours. It's unfair, really. How is it possible for one person to know so much?
Nikolai shrugged.
I just like bridges. All right. Well, if you ever find you don't need all that genius for yourself, I'm happy to take some off your hands. And when it comes time to build a bridge, I'll be sure our corps of engineers consults with you. But for now...
Pasha turned to the ferrymaster.
We'll take the skiff.
He pointed to the small vessel kept on board as a lifeboat.
Yes, Your Imperial Highness.
The ferrymaster shouted to his crew to prepare the boat.
One of my men will row you to shore.
That will not be necessary, thank you. Nikolai and I will manage on our own.
He glanced at his guard, who had gathered nearby. Gavril cleared his throat.
No, Gavril, I'm not going to allow you to explore the island first. I'm quite sure it's harmless.
I am sure it is as well, Your Imperial Highness. The Tsar ordered a regiment to ensure its safety shortly after sunrise this morning. The island is small enough that they were able to scour it from coast to coast. I was merely about to suggest that I accompany you to shore, just in case.
Pasha scowled. Nikolai knew he didn't like that his father's men had beaten him to the island, especially since Pasha had declared it off-limits. And even more so, Pasha hated that his father could anticipate that he would come to the island first thing. Pasha didn't like to think himself so predictable.
All right, Gavril, you can come with us, but only you. The skiff will capsize if there are more than three of us in it.
Gavril boarded the skiff first to verify that it was sturdy. Pasha scowled again at being handled so gently. And once its fitness for the Cesarevich was confirmed, Pasha and Nikolai were permitted to climb aboard. The boat rocked with the weight of all three of them, but once they were settled in, it was stable. The ferry's crew lowered the skiff into the water.
I can row,
Nikolai said.
I'll do it,
Pasha said.
Your Imperial Highness, Gavril said. Either Nikolai or I can...
No,
Pasha grabbed the oars.
I said, I'll do it.
Nikolai relented. Pasha was much better at sea than he was anyway. After all, Pasha had been on ships to Stockholm and Amsterdam, not to mention he'd sailed on the Sea of Azov. And where had Nikolai been all his life? On the ground, following yaks on the steppe, or delivering packages on the streets of St. Petersburg? Nikolai sighed. It wasn't even a contest. Nikolai leaned back and focused on conjuring a shield around their little boat, in case the Nyavar decided to grow violent again. Pasha's strokes were long and strong, pushing and pulling the water in a steady rhythm. Swish, swash, swish, swash, swish, swash. The cadence almost hypnotized Nikolai back to sleep. He was still so tired from creating the masquerade and imagination boxes, and from staying up all night at the ball. He didn't get the chance to doze off, though, for he needed to keep the shield intact, and a few minutes later, they were at the island. As soon as the skiff pulled close to the rocky shore, Gavriel jumped out to tie the boat to a maple on the coast. The tree was fully leafed and green. Eternal summer, indeed. Pasha climbed out next, and finally, Nikolai. All three of them stood with mouths agape as they took in the scenery. It was, as Nikolai had guessed, very much like the summer garden in St. Petersburg. The breeze from the bay rustled through the trees and pink flowering bushes. The burbling of water indicated fountains or waterfalls in the distance. Warblers chirped and ducks quacked. And everywhere in the air was her magic. Nikolai closed his eyes and felt the tingle of it on his skin, like a sprinkle of rain or a dusting of snow. Her enchantment pulsed in the ground beneath his boots, and he could smell it in the wind, the scent of honeysuckle mixed with cinnamon, the same fragrance that wafted from Vika's hair when she danced. He felt hot and cold again, found and lost, like he'd felt with her in his arms at the ball.
"Are you asleep again, Nikolai?"
His eyes fluttered open, and Pasha stood in front of him, grinning. How long had he been there? Nikolai really had lost track of space and time.
"Gavril has gone off to inspect and secure the coast, but I thought we might head inside."
Pasha pointed at the wide gravel path that led into the park. It was a long promenade lined with oaks and shaded overhead by their leaves.
"Yes, of course," Nikolai said. "Lead the way."
They followed the path and entered the boulevard of trees. Everywhere they looked, there were larks and wrens, peeping a melody that sounded almost like an old Russian folk song. If Nikolai listened too closely, the song disintegrated into random notes. But if he softened his focus, the tune came back together again, like the whistling of panpipes and the strumming of a balalaika.
"This is a wonderland," Pasha said.
Nikolai could only nod, for he did not have the words to express how true a statement that was. For every leaf that Pasha saw, Nikolai also saw every stem and vein on that leaf. For every pond that Pasha marveled at, Nikolai sensed every droplet of water that filled it. A boulder was not merely a boulder, but a rock face full of detailed crags and slivers of crystal. None of it was as simple as it seemed, and it had all been conjured out of nothing.
"This island is the best enchantment yet," Pasha said.
Nikolai suppressed a grimace. Ever since dancing with Vika, it had been harder to think of the game as a competition. But here was proof once more that it was, and she had bested him yet again. The boys walked deeper into the park. It was easy to maintain their bearings. Like the summer garden, the island was laid out geometrically, with paths running parallel and perpendicular. Unlike the summer garden, however, Nikolai noticed an absence of statues and fountains. In fact, there was nothing resembling the man-made here. No benches, no sculptures, no columns and iron grill fences. Perhaps because that was not Vika's strength. But it was his. Nikolai's scar seared against his skin, and it suddenly occurred to him that the lack of a dock and the dearth of statuary were deliberate. It was an open invitation for him to play. This island was not Vika's alone. It could also be Nikolai's. He looked overhead to the canopy of leaves and smiled. But then his smile faded. Had she created this island for them to collaborate? Or was it a trap, waiting to be sprung? Nikolai might have forgotten about the game the other night at the ball, but it was possible she had not. No, it was likely she had not. Pasha waved to him from an outcropping that overlooked the Nevar Bay to St. Petersburg. Beside him rose a pillar of rock shaped like an enormous candle.
"Hey-oh, Nikolai! Come see the view!"
Nikolai sighed.
I'll be right there!
He trudged over to where Pasha stood. But he did not take in the bay or St. Petersburg. All he could focus on was the pillar of rock. It looked just like a candle that had been snuffed out. Chapter 37. Since work at the Zakrevsky household had slowed to a tortoise's crawl, Renata was permitted to set up a tea stall next to Ludmila's pumpkin kiosk to make some extra money. Her station consisted of a simple table and several large copper samovars, and a set of barely chipped cups and saucers Renata had salvaged when the Countess declared them wanting. For a few kopecks, Renata would sell Ludmila's customers a cup of tea to go with their pastry. For a few more coins, she would read their leaves. As soon as she opened her stall, the first customer arrived.
"I understand you read leaves," she said.
Renata gaped at her. It was the Lightning Girl, Lady Snow, the other enchanter in Nikolai's game. She tried to look Vika in the eyes, but had to turn away. There was something too vibrant about them, too green, too intense.
Yes, miss, I read leaves.
She fumbled with setting up the samovar.
Will you read mine?
She could not seem to form a coherent sentence. Although she and Vika were close to the same age, Vika's confidence and the way she carried herself made her infinitely more formidable than Renata could ever be.
You were the girl at the ball with Nikolai, were you not? In the peacock gown. I recognize your braids. They're very intricate. Yes, that was me.
Vika reached over to help Renata with the stubborn spigot on the samovar.
There. That ought to be better. Thank you. Your dress was, exquisite.
Vika beamed.
Thank you. I was lucky to have such a gown. Now, if I may inquire about the tea. Oh, yes, I...
Renata could think of no excuse for not serving Vika. It also seemed unwise to defy her. She grabbed one of the clean cups and a saucer and filled it with tea.
Come, join me.
Vika glanced behind her as if to confirm there was no one else waiting for Renata's services. Renata instinctively looked down the street, toward the Zakrevsky house, as if Nikolai could come to her rescue. But he couldn't. He was on the new island with the Cesarevich. She followed Vika to one of the tables by the canal that Ludmila had set up for her patrons. Renata waited until Vika was seated before she herself sat.
I'm Vika Andreeva, by the way.
Renata stood up again and curtsied.
I hardly think that's necessary. It's not as if I'm the Grand Princess. What is your name? Renata. Renata Galigina. It's nice to meet you, Renata. Please, do sit.
She obeyed.
Are you...
Vika spun her cup back and forth on the saucer.
Are you Nikolai's betrothed?
Renata's eyes widened.
Me? Oh, no. No, miss. He's my friend. But I'm a servant in the Zakrevsky household. Nikolai would never marry someone like me. I'm not so sure of that.
Vika tilted her head, as if to get a better, deeper look at Renata.
He seems rather fond of you. He took you to the ball?
Her voice lifted at the end, almost like a question tinged with the hope that Renata would deny it. Which, of course, she had to. Not only because it was the truth, but also because Renata was trained to speak honestly to her superiors.
No, miss, she said. I came to the ball on my own. I wanted to...
The words drained away, along with the color in Renata's face. Vika seemed to relax into her chair.
Let me guess. Keep an eye on me?
She smiled kindly. Renata stared at the table and focused on the floral pattern of the tablecloth.
You know about the game, Vika said.
Renata considered hiding under her table. She had promised Nikolai she wouldn't tell anyone about the game. Of course, her promise probably did not cover telling the other enchanter, since Vika already knew. But as Renata nodded, she still felt she had breached her word.
I understand if you don't want to read my leaves, Vika said. I think I already know what they will say. I think you do too. That either Nikolai or I will die in the game.
She cast her eyes downward to the table.
Yes. I suppose I was hoping this game would be different from the ones in the past. That perhaps the Tsar somehow wouldn't have to choose only one of us.
Vika looked back up.
I was hoping for a miracle.
Renata was as well. She wanted so badly to read Vika's leaves, and yet, what was the point, if she already knew what they would say? But morbid curiosity latched onto her, and she reached across the table to take Vika's cup. This would be her only chance to see into Nikolai's future again. He had refused to let her read his leaves after she'd read so much darkness in them the last time. Perhaps Vika's cup would shed some light. The leaves were grouped in three small clusters, three separate but related prophecies. At the top of the cup were two curved leaves that almost formed a heart, but for a third leaf that jutted into it. It represented love, possibly from a lover, but possibly from parents, siblings, or friends, and it foretold that love for Vika would always come with suffering. But Renata didn't tell her so. It seemed cruel. And selfishly, Renata didn't want to say anything about love. She didn't want Vika to think about the word love when she was asking about the game and Nikolai. So Renata skipped those leaves and went to the next cluster. Three arched leaves, one right after another.
This could mean movement. Like a journey. Yes. Or emotional movement, internal change. I don't know. It's a bit vague. I see.
Vika bit her lip.
And what about that one?
Renata swallowed. The leaf she'd indicated was a sharp line with a jagged edge. There was another short leaf across the top, like a hilt.
A knife. Death.
Oh. Vika sagged in her chair.
The crookedness means it is not as expected. But one of us will still die. One of you will still die.
Renata clutched the sides of the cup tightly. Both she and Vika stared at the leaves, as if they could will them to move and prophesy something else instead. In that moment, it seemed that the canal next to them turned black. But when Renata looked again, the water was purple. And there was something else in the leaves, although Renata didn't say it, for she suddenly felt as if she'd revealed too much. But Vika stared at her.
What is it? What is what? The thing you're keeping from me. I'm not. Renata.
Vika curled her fingers. Was it a threat? What would she do to Renata if she didn't tell her what was in the cup? Or worse, what would she do to Nikolai? Renata's heart rose into her throat.
The knife,
she blurted in her panic over Nikolai.
The leaves that form the knife are close to the inner circle, the bottom of the cup. Which means...
Vika's fingers tensed.
It means death is coming soon.
Chapter 38. Beneath one of the bridges that traversed Yekaterinsky Canal, a hooded figure loitered, listening. She kept her distance from the girls discussing their tea leaves, for the woman stank of rot, like scraps of meat left out in the garbage on a midsummer day. But because there was no one else at the pumpkin bakery at this early hour, she was still close enough to hear. After the step, Aijana had travelled to Moscow. There, she lurked outside restaurants and horse races, and anywhere she could find nobility, hoping for a glimpse of her son. Of course, she did not know what he looked like. So she'd done the only thing she could think of, stalk the aristocracy and hope she would recognize her boy, if only because she was his mother. But then word reached Moscow of the wonders springing forth in the capital city, and Aijana knew the source must be Nikolai. From the stories her village had told of his powers, it had to be him. Aijana rushed to St. Petersburg then, her putrefied heart swelling with pride. She tracked him down to a house along Yekaterinsky Canal, and it was here that she had hidden, hoping for a glimpse of her son. But now, as she eavesdropped on the girls, a different horror set in, for it was apparent Nikolai was involved in a game of sorts, a competition, from which only one enchanter could emerge victorious. And the Tsar would choose the winner. Aijana had to lean against the walls of the dank underpass for support, as her weak leg crumpled beneath her. Her son could die when she had only just found him. Was this the purpose for which the noblewoman had purchased Nikolai from the tribe? To enter him as a pawn in a game for the Tsar's amusement? Aijana's blood boiled, threatening to rupture her brittle veins. But then her rage settled at a simmer.
It is because of me that he was lost in the first place. I was not strong enough. I nearly let death take me. Nikolai's misfortunes stem from my failure as his mother.
She pulled herself deeper into the shadows beneath the bridge. She was not worthy of meeting her son now. It did not mean, however, that she could not make herself so. As flies began to swarm around her, attracted to her stench, Aijana adjusted the hood around her face and smiled a rotten, gap-toothed smile.
I will find you again, Nikolai, as soon as I redeem myself as your mother.
And she had a plan. She would kill the Tsar. Chapter 39. The next day, Pasha stood in the archery yard with a bow and a quiver of arrows. The weaponry master, Maxim, had cleared not only the archery range, but also the entire practice arena where the Tsar's guard ordinarily trained and sparred, because Pasha's aim was so accurate. He needed twice the normal distance in which to practice.
Ready!
Maxim hollered.
Ready!
Pasha said.
I don't want to hurt you, your Imperial Highness.
So little faith in me, Maxim.
Pasha grinned.
I said I'm ready. Now shoot!
Maxim shook his head but lifted his bow. He pulled an arrow from the quiver on his back. He aimed it straight at Pasha.
All right, your Imperial Highness! Ready?
Yes, shoot!
I pray to the Lord you know what you're doing!
Maxim aimed again, making sure his line was directly to Pasha's chest, took a deep breath, and let an arrow fly. Pasha drew back his own arrow and shot it straight at the incoming one. He knocked Maxim's out of the air, and the arrows clattered to the dirt below. Maxim's jaw dropped so far, his grey beard met the armor on his chest.
Again!
Pasha said, grinning even harder than before.
I like this trick!
Your Imperial Highness! I can't! If I strike you, the Tsar will have my head!
At that moment, Yuliana appeared on the gravel path, leading to the archery range.
What nonsense are you up to that would cause Maxim to lose his head?
The way she moved always appeared elegant, but sounded like an angry stampede of wildebeests, even when she wasn't angry or irritated, which, to be honest, was rare. But she wasn't upset now. Although her footsteps were vehement, the tone of her question was woven through with genuine curiosity. Pasha's archery practice was one of the few settings where he and his sister were both consistently pleasant. Well, Pasha was always pleasant. But yes, watching him shoot arrows somehow soothed Yuliana's ruffled edges. Maxim bowed to Yuliana. Pasha wiped the sweat off his brow.
Oh, nothing. Maxim's being overly cautious. He refuses to shoot any more arrows at me.
I'd say that Maxim is the wiser of the two of you, although that's nothing we don't already know.
Pasha laughed.
Maxim, I believe you're finished here. Pasha and I will shoot at something safer. A stationary, non-human target.
She gestured at the bullseyes that were set up 150 feet away, at the end of what was the normal archery range, not Pasha's extended one.
Yes, Your Imperial Highness.
Maxim bowed to both Pasha and Yuliana, hung his bow and quiver on the weaponry rack, and left the field.
You're no fun,
Pasha said through a smile.
But I'm rather good at keeping my brother alive,
Yuliana said. Pasha set down his bow for a second to roll his sleeves to his elbows. After an hour of shooting, much of it involving running while hitting moving targets that Maxim threw in the air, Pasha was hot, and the muscles in his forearms were taut from the exertion. But if Yuliana wanted to shoot with him, he'd press on. There was no holding back anyway when it came to target practice, for it was one thing for certain in which Pasha was better than Nikolai, and he wouldn't cede that ground, even if archery was a completely useless hobby.
What are you musing on?
Yuliana asked.
What do you mean?
You come out here when you need to think. Something's on your mind.
Pasha laughed. He actually hadn't realized that he came to the archery range to think. But now that his sister mentioned it, he found that it was true. The library and the range were solace to him.
Nothing slips your notice, he said.
As a general rule, no,
Yuliana said.
So what is it that's preoccupying you?
Pasha picked up his bow again and drew an arrow from his quiver.
Do you think she likes me?
He asked Yuliana.
Who?
The girl from the ball.
Pasha's stomach somersaulted just thinking about her.
Which girl? You danced with half the room.
Pasha lowered his bow and cast a wry smile at his sister.
You know the one. Lady Snow. She was, as far as I'm concerned, the only girl in the room.
Yuliana walked, or rather stomped, away to the weapons rack and lifted a small bow. She strapped on a quiver too, then returned to Pasha's side.
Well, if she's the one you're pining after, I'd say you ought to move on.
And why's that?
Pasha aimed at the target again.
She's not at all your equal.
Pasha let three arrows fly in rapid succession. Two of them hit their marks, but the third landed far awry with a thwack in the outer ring. He sighed.
I know. She'd probably like Nikolai better than me.
Yuliana rolled her eyes at him.
I didn't mean that she's above you. You're the Cesarevich. You have few equals, if any at all.
She sighted her arrow and shot. It hit two rings off center.
And Nikolai is no competition. He's a commoner. At best, he can aspire to work for you someday.
Pasha laughed. Nikolai working for him. He could only imagine what that would be like, having Nikolai in his guard. He could probably slay an entire enemy army with a single scowl.
I cannot picture Nikolai taking orders from me.
It's your future,
Yuliana said.
Not necessarily Nikolai, but people in general. You have to get used to the idea that you're better than everyone else.
That sounds horrible and lonely.
She shrugged.
It's not so bad, being horrible.
Yuliana.
She glide stomped over and stood up on her toes. She pecked him on the cheek.
Oh, don't worry about me, brother. It's I who ought to worry about you. You haven't a horrid bone in your body, which means you'll make a wretched Tsar.
Pasha smiled down at her. She was chilly, to be sure, but it was impossible for him not to respect her. His sister knew what she wanted, and she knew how to get it. That certainly couldn't be said of himself.
So do you think she likes me, even though I'm destined to be a disaster of a Tsar, with no friends and sadly unhorrible bones?
Yuliana sighed, but there was a light in her eyes.
Pasha, if you want her to like you, she'll like you. You're the Cesarevich. It's time you got that into your pretty little head.
Chapter 40 Nikolai landed on the Stygian black shore of the new island at 10:30. He had borrowed a rowboat from the dock and charmed it to sail across the bay. The waters were savage at this late hour, a combination of the wind and the tide, and if it weren't for the enchantment to smooth the way, the boat would have ended up capsized or smashed against the rocks. Once on solid ground, Nikolai unpacked a bundle of balsa wood and sandpaper from his satchel. He was quite sure now that the island wasn't a trap, as it hadn't tried to swallow him whole or otherwise kill him the last time he was here. Perhaps the ball had changed something after all. What he wasn't sure of was what that meant for the game. But the scar beneath his collarbone still burned, insisting that Nikolai play. And so self-preservation plunged him forward with his turn, even though he no longer knew how he wanted the game to end. First, he intended to build the island a proper dock. This place, this magic, was something the people of St. Petersburg should have the chance to see, even if they couldn't understand it. Nikolai slashed his index finger through the air, slicing the wood boards into sticks. He charmed notches in the wood where the pieces could fit snugly together. He enchanted the sandpaper and set it about evening out the rough edges, before he commanded the pieces to fit themselves together.
Just like being a child again.
A simple project, like the ones Nikolai had mastered when he was only a boy, when Galina had taught him the physics of construction and architecture, by drilling him with kit after kit of model bridges and towers and masted ships. When the miniature dock was finished, Nikolai leaned over the rocky edge of the island and dropped the model pier into the water. Now was where the effort came in. He gritted his teeth and focused all his energy on the dock, and it began to expand, growing larger and larger until it was wide enough and long enough for a ferry to anchor itself at the end. Sweat trickled down the back of Nikolai's neck. His jaw cramped as he pressed onward, fighting the hostility of the waves and extending the dock's posts into the floor of the bay. Finally, he embedded them deep in the sandy bottom. Then he collapsed on the shore and lay on his back, panting. But there was no time to rest. There was so much more to do before daybreak. Nikolai gave himself another moment to catch his breath, and then climbed back to his feet, picked up his bag, and dragged himself to the center of the island. Now for another enchantment. Wire. Nikolai snapped his fingers. And paper. He snapped again, and there, in the midst of all the trees, a spool of wire and a large sheet of crepe paper appeared in the air. Nikolai began to hum a snake-charming song, an eerie, hollow tune. The wire unfurled and twisted up in wide spirals, as if it were a cobra at Nikolai's command. When it was round and full, like the circular ribs inside a globe, Nikolai halted his melody. The crepe paper came next. With a flick of his wrist, the white paper wrapped itself around the wire, and instantly, the metal frame turned into a paper lantern. Nikolai tapped the top of the lantern, and it lit up, despite having no candle inside. Now I need about 1,000 more. The lantern leaped to action and flew straight up into the sky. There it began to multiply. 2, 4, 8, 16. On and on, until they had doubled 10 times and reached 1,024. Nikolai pointed in every direction, and that sent each of them zipping to a different part of the garden. The island now lit up by a seemingly endless string of glowing paper orbs.
Voila,
he whispered. He hardly had enough energy to speak. And yet, he produced a tiny bench from the satchel, purchased as part of a dollhouse set, and put it on the ground. Then he blew on the bench, and where there had been one, there were suddenly 10. Nikolai flung his arm outward, and the benches shot off and planted themselves along the main promenade, each bench equidistant from the next. There they began to enlarge, like the model dock and the jack-in-the-box and ballerina had done before. When the benches had grown to full size, Nikolai fell to his knees, all his muscles shaking. His shirt was drenched with sweat, his hair damp against his forehead. He wanted to lie down right there, melt into the gravel, and sleep for days. He could use his overcoat as a blanket. The waves slamming against the shore would be a fitting, violent lullaby. But it was already past midnight, and there was still so much, too much, to be done before the sun rose in 7 hours. At least the next part of his turn could be accomplished in his sleep. It would be a fitful sleep, but Nikolai would be able to recover a little while he worked. In theory. He scraped himself off the ground and staggered to the nearest bench. There, he shrugged off his overcoat and laid it on top of the seat, then lay down and stretched out his legs, thankful he decided to make the benches extra long. He pulled his satchel under his head, like a pillow, and closed his eyes to sleep. But before he drifted off, he reached over and drummed his fingers several times on the armrest, and he whispered to the bench,
"Moscow. This one is Moscow."
And then his entire body relaxed, and he fell into a dream. Chapter 41. At dawn, Vika's scar flared, and she knew that Nikolai's move had been made. She was also certain it was on the island, as sure as she knew that her hair was red. What Vika didn't know was how Nikolai had interpreted her island. She didn't even know herself whether she'd intended it as a means to cooperate, or merely the next step in one-upmanship. Had she ruined their connection by fleeing the masquerade? Was Nikolai still merely an opponent? Or was he something more? Vika both feared and hoped for the latter option. She climbed out of bed and peeked out of her curtains. It was barely light outside. And yet, she couldn't wait several more hours until the ferries began to run, and someone could be convinced to take her to the island. She could, of course, go down to the dock and commandeer a boat for herself, but even that seemed too slow. If only she could evanesce. But why not try? Ever since the game began, ever since she'd moved to St. Petersburg, Vika had felt stronger. Maybe it was being close to Nikolai, their magic magnifying against each other. Or maybe the challenge of the game simply pushed her to be better. But whatever it was, it allowed her to perform enchantments greater than she'd ever created before, and to get by on almost no sleep, even after conjuring an entire island. Of course, in the past, she'd only been able to evanesce a few feet, and it would be a few miles to the island. But it was worth an attempt. If it didn't work, there was always a boat to steal. Vika closed her eyes. She imagined herself disappearing and reappearing again on the new island.
"Do it. Do it. Go."
She squeezed her eyes shut tighter. Nothing happened, except everything got blacker. Vika huffed and opened her eyes. Perhaps she would have to steal a boat.
Except I don't want to, she thought.
She really, really wanted to evanesce. In fact, this intensity of wanting reminded her of the same spark she used to feel right before she mastered a new skill, like mending a fox's sprained ankle or beckoning the snow. It was a combination of pure will and the right moment that had allowed her to do those things. And now, with this increased power, with all this new energy from the game, this was the moment. Vika knew this would be the moment she would learn to evanesce. It had to be. Perhaps she needed to approach it differently. Rather than jumping from one place to the next, perhaps Vika needed to feel the sensation of evanescing in order to coax it to happen. Provide her body with actual instructions, so to speak. She closed her eyes again, but this time, instead of commanding her body to disappear and simply reappear, Vika first envisioned her body, whole, and then, when she could see every detail of herself, she began to think of her body not as one, but as an infinity of tiny pieces.
I am no longer Vika Andreeva, she thought. I am composed of minuscule bubbles.
She felt herself begin to disintegrate. And then she really did become those bubbles.
I am effervescent.
It made so much sense now. Vika was a master of the elements, and now she had become an element herself. She'd become a fizzy, magical rain. The wind heard her desire to evanesce, and it whooshed through her window and blew her away.
The island,
her thoughts whispered, and the wind obeyed, whisking her like champagne raindrops over Nevsky Prospect, past the colorful canals, and across the Neval River and bay. It carried her over the island and swirled down to the gardens. Then it deposited her dissolved quintessence at the foot of the main promenade. Vika's sense of self was nebulous. If she'd had a head, it would have felt full of clouds. But although she was not much more than sparkling fog, she retained the impression that she used to be something more.
Come back together,
she thought, although she was not sure what it was that she was supposed to be. The tiny bubbles, however, knew. She'd shepherded them all safely to the island, and one by one, they reunited. She blinked, for a moment staring at her hands and feet, as if she'd never seen them before. Then the memory of being human rushed back, and she laughed and wiggled her fingers and toes.
I did it!
Vika touched her arms and legs and neck and head. And yes, every single piece of her was there. She laughed again. She stretched and she spun, and she found that her body worked exactly as it should.
I did it!
She wasn't tired at all. After another minute, she remembered to look around her, because she'd come to the island not for the experience of evanescing, but to uncover Nikolai's move. She stood at the beginning of the promenade in the middle of the island's gardens, and as she took in her surroundings, she gasped. Where there had been only a canopy of leaves when she'd left yesterday, golden globes now ornamented the branches, suspended by invisible string and floating in the breeze. The soft glow of the lanterns complemented the orange light of the rising sun. Across the path from her was a new bench. Although Vika was not tired from evanescing, her breath was a bit unsteady, as if her newly reconstituted lungs were still relearning how to breathe. So she walked over to the bench. It looked ordinary enough, except for a brass plaque on its seat back that said, Moscow, in both Russian and French. And magic wafted off the bench in a mist of pale blue vapor.
Will this kill me if I sit?
No one answered, except the larks and wrens she'd put in the trees, singing her favorite folk songs. But Nikolai's magic reached out, the pale blue mist curling in wisps around her. The tugging began again in the center of her chest. So she took a deep breath and dropped down onto the bench.